This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Gerard Jones, is a comic book fan turned comic book writer. He's written for the series Batman, Spider-Man, and Pokemon. He's also the author of a book about comics called Comic Book Heroes. Questions about the impact of violent pop culture on children have followed him throughout his life. As a child, his mother was reluctant to let him read superhero comics because of the violence. Later, as the author of superhero comics, he had to figure out how violent to make his stories. Now he's written a new book called Killing Monsters that argues that children need some make-believe violence. When he was a child, his mother thought a lot of pop culture was crude. I asked how he started reading comics.
I was going through a pretty classic middle school depression. I was not finding anything to interest me. I was cutting school. I was going out late at night on these long walks. I was looking for something, but nothing was working for me. And my mom was an English teacher in high school, and one of her students was a kid sort of like me, kind of a brainy, geeky kid, but much more settled in his society, and I had had some good friends, and he was always into some interesting projects. And his big passion of the time was Marvel Comics, and he did an independent study report on them for my mom. And my mom had had a huge bias against comics since the 50s, really. That was the one thing that she had disliked from very early on because of the furor about it, the Senate investigation of violence in comics. And she decided that because this kid liked these so much and was proselytizing them so strongly, that she would actually borrow some and bring them home. So I found myself suddenly gifted by my mother with these crass, crude, violent entertainments, and I glommed onto them instantly.
Which comics did she bring home for you, and how did she choose those?
She just asked this kid, Jack, to loan her something, and he decided to just give her all of the preceding month's Marvels. He was still looking at that month, so I got just an assortment of these things: Daredevil, Fantastic Four, Captain America. But the one that really got me was the Hulk, the Incredible Hulk, because I was looking back. I couldn't have articulated this at the time, but looking back, I saw myself as ineffective, as scrawny, and as unable to change my world. And I also was going through a lot of anger that, trying very hard to be a good boy, I was not expressing. And then here was this character in the comics who was a geeky, mild scientist who, because of being hit by gamma rays, would become the Hulk when he was angry. He would feel the rage coming up, and he would suddenly realize, no, I can't give in to the rage, I can't let this happen. But then the transformation would begin, and he would become a huge, over-muscled, green brute, and tear out of his clothes, and lose most of his mental functions, but have all his passions completely unapologetically, and he would go stomping around and destroying buildings and fighting with the army and defeating bad guys along the way. He always ended up being on the side of the angels, but without having to subscribe to social codes, just by virtue of sensing who was hurting who and who to fight. And this was something that really spoke to me intensely. I didn't realize it then, but I could be the Hulk. I could tap into this rage that I was bottling up, and I could explode, and maybe I could change the world.
When you started writing for the comics, what was your attitude about violent stories or the portrayal of violence? How much had you internalized your parents' and teachers' feelings that, you know, violent fantasies were bad for children?
It was interesting to discover, and it took me a while even to notice them. I would do superhero stories. I would write fight scenes, as I had to. But I found myself pulling back. I found myself doing many more talking scenes than the average comic book writer. I found myself going into the subtleties of character. My editors would even get a little frustrated that it took me too long sometimes to get to the suspense, to get to the action. And that was something for me to look at. I realized that even though I didn't mind the fight scenes when I read them, and I understood that this was part of the charm of the genre, I was not going all the way into them. I was backing off. And now I can see that this was about this very early sense that my own anger and violent fantasies and love of big conflictive action was something I was really ambivalent about. And I was half-consciously taking it upon myself to lift these superheroes out of that material, which made for some pretty good smart stories, but it also really limited them because these characters were born of physical conflict and they're meant to be metaphors of power versus power. And so I was pulling away from the essence of them. And although I was a pretty popular writer, that prevented me, I think, from really connecting strongly with my readers. And it was at a comic book convention in 94 that I had a conversation with a girl, a 13-year-old girl, who was a big fan of one of my comics called Freaks. And what she focused on, what she said she liked best, which surprised me, was the fight scenes. It wasn't the subtle character interplay, and it wasn't the talk. She liked that, too. But she said it was in the fight scenes that you could really see the character's passion. And clearly that's when they became alive for her. And there were probably many conversations I could have had that would have started me thinking, but that was the one. I thought, here's this very meek, mild, self-restrained 13-year-old girl, not quite the, you know, the usual, the idea, the stereotype of the comic book fan, saying that she really got something out of the fights. And I was thinking of myself at the same age, the Hulk, what this violence meant to me, this make-believe violence. And that's when I really started looking in my writing and in my emotions, my thoughts. What does this mean to me? Why is it so powerful? And yet, why do I shy away from it, too?
You've written comics and you've written about comics. Do you think the violent fantasies in comics have changed over the decades?
Yeah, one of the big changes that I found distressing as a middle-aged writer of them was the rise of anger in the characters. And that was one of the things that really got me thinking, okay, where are kids now and what's going on in them? Because the comics I grew up on, the Hulk was an angry character, but he was pretty unusual. He was almost goofy because of his extreme anger. Most of the heroes were calm. You know, you had Superman was always smiling, and Batman was usually grim but not rageful. And then around 1980, there was this huge upswelling of the almost dementedly angry hero, and even Superman now is all grimacing and his hair is wild and he's sweating. And it was at that point that I started asking, what are kids so mad about? And I think one of the things that they're so mad about is just the fact that nobody's listening to their anger, so they need to see it reflected back more and more in their pop culture.
My guest is Gerard Jones. He's written superhero comics. His new book, Killing Monsters, is about children and make-believe violence. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Gerard Jones. He's written comic books for the superhero series Batman, Spider-Man, and Pokemon. His new book is about superheroes, violent fantasies, and their impact on children. It's called Killing Monsters. Were there women characters when you were writing comic books?
Yeah, there were, but that's a huge shift in pop culture really recently. There would either be the Invisible Girl in the Fantastic Four, and the name Invisible Girl, says it all. Yes, she was shy and retiring and dependent on her husband and the whole thing. And then there was good old Wonder Woman, who was kind of the only superheroine who really had a following, mostly a little girl following. The girls would kind of dump her as they got up toward the preteen years. And scattered here and there, there were attempts to do these sort of lame feminist heroines who would come in screaming about male chauvinist pigs, and those, of course, died instantly. But when I got back looking at comics in the 80s, and as the last decade and a half have gone by, I've seen it more and more, is just this huge variety of female characters. And they don't look that varied. If you just look at, because they're all tiny-waisted, big-breasted, and not very thoroughly covered, let's put it that way. But within that, this is the huge gamut of the cold, competent one and the angry one and the tender, protective one and then combinations thereof. And I think this humanization of the made-up violent female is one of the best things that's happened in pop culture recently, and it's shifting. The audience is responding. More and more little girls now are into action entertainment than ever before, and I think they're forcing the material to change too.
As you pointed out, the women in action comics are usually very scantily clad and very big-breasted. Mm-hmm. What was it like for you to draw characters like that?
I never liked those characters. I didn't draw; I wrote.
That's true.
So
that's right.
So I'd script them and then you know, the artist would turn him in looking like that. I still have some problems with that. I would like to see more body types out there for girls. But as I caught on to the fact that there were a lot of girls who loved these characters, and then in looking at other media like the Mortal Kombat, there's a scantily clad, gorgeous martial arts fighter who turned out to be a favorite of both boy and girl players, and of course, Tomb Raider, you know, Lara Croft. It struck me that to some extent what these girls are is what Batman or Superman or the Hulk was to me. As a little kid, I was scrawny, other kids are obese, but no kid is really that comfortable with his physicality yet. He's, if nothing else, he's too small. To be able to pretend to be these big, super-muscled characters for a while, it doesn't make them feel bad about themselves or think they have to abuse themselves to become that nearly as often as it enables them to be that for a while. In Fantasyland, they can be that perfect masculine stereotype, and then it's actually easier to be yourself. And I found this a lot with girls. They can be Lara Croft, even though they don't look anything like Lara Croft, and no, they won't. And then they go back to themselves, but that Lara Croft fantasy is still there. It's sort of like somebody our age who loves pretending to be Audrey Hepburn in a sense. You know, you look at an Audrey Hepburn movie and you're her for 2 hours, but you come back and you don't hate yourself for not being Audrey Hepburn. You're still kind of Audrey Hepburn in your real life.
You were one of the people who translated Pokemon, which started as a Japanese comic. You translated it into an American market. Mm-hmm. So it already existed, but it existed in a different culture. So is Pokemon still really popular? It was such a big craze a couple of years ago. Where is it now?
It still has its diehards. There's still little kids who are really into just the funny characters and watching the cartoon. It's still profitable for them, I'm pretty sure of that. Mm-hmm. And it still has a lot of older kids who play the games. But when a fad is that hot, it almost always breaks quickly. And I think what happens, kids don't like to feel that they're being jerked around by the adult world. And obviously they get jerked around a lot by the adult world. But when they really catch on that they're expected to be into something like Pokemon, and it's being marketed at them everywhere they turn, a lot of them turn against it. My son, Nicky, was just, he hated Pokemon. He would, or mostly he'd pretend to hate Pokemon. He'd cover his ears if anybody said the word. For a while, he liked Digimon, which I don't think he really liked, except it was the competition. So this proved he didn't like Pokemon because he was into Digimon. Then he lost interest in that. So it's there. I think it's a very vital fantasy for kids. I think it's one of the best pop culture creations for kids in recent years. And because of that, I don't think it's going to go away. But I think the marketing kind of killed it, frankly, because it started as a schoolyard craze. It was not turned into a craze by marketing, and I think the marketing popped the bubble.
This may sound like an odd question to ask an adult, but if you could be any superhero, which one would you choose to be now?
That's a good one. You know, when I was in the business, I was always drawn to Batman because he was so rational in his control. He was so smart all the time. Who would I be now? It's sort of like the one I would want to be kind of isn't there. In a way, I'm actually kind of drawn to Lara Croft. There's something about being this girl with some girly sensibilities who's also so incredibly powerful and able to do what has to be done.
Now, you mentioned Batman. Didn't you do a comic with Batman and Robin, which had this whole like musical generation gap thing going where Robin mm-hmm. really liked rock and roll and Batman was opposed to it?
Yeah, that was actually the last superhero comic I wrote. I wrote some Pokemon stuff after that, but that was it for the costumed characters. And that was kind of a statement on in a way these same themes that we get scared by something that we don't understand, and we confuse our own anxieties about it with the actual effect it's having on the person who's into it. So it was kind of celebrating Robin's discovery of this forbidden rebel world and Batman having to realize that he can have that world, but he's still Robin. He's still going to be there for him.
So Batman was like the responsible parent or teacher saying, this is bad for you. And Robin was the kid discovering exciting new stuff.
Yeah, Batman was the one who was blurring fantasy and reality, because he would see all the dark and rebellious and destructive imagery in The Rock and think, well, therefore this is teaching people to be that. And Robin was the one who was getting that. No, I'm still the boy wonder I always was, but I like to go here for play. It's a difference between media as teacher versus media as playground, and I think entertainment's usually a playground, and that's what Robin had to hit Batman to in the course of that story.
Well, thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, thank you.
Gerard Jones has written superhero comics. His new book is called Killing Monsters. This is Fresh Air.